Welcome once again to Maine's Political Pulse. I'm Erwin Gratz with Mal Leary and Steve Missler. We talk a lot here about candidates, but one of Maine's biggest election battles next year is likely to be over a power line. Specifically, the power line Central Maine Power wants to build to bring Quebec hydropower across western Maine to Massachusetts. Opponents are gathering signatures to force a referendum that would block the project. Steve Missler, CMP, though, is not even waiting for that petition drive to succeed.
No, they're not. In fact, they're right out of a gate with a campaign that began with a television ad that started running on Wednesday. They also rolled out a pair of endorsements from the Maine State Chamber of Commerce and the Electrical Workers Union that would stand to benefit from a pretty big infrastructure project. What's interesting, of course, is that why are they starting so early? I think the answer to that is that the transmission line project, if you were to go by the votes that the communities have taken where this line would pass through, is deeply unpopular. And so I think Central Maine Power and its affiliated political action committee has made the decision that they need to get out there and start messaging and trying to influence Maine people before there's even a certified ballot initiative, which would take place in November of next year. And I think they have a keen sense of how deeply unpopular it is, because the PAC, during its last finance report, basically spent over $140,000 on polling, which is a ton of money. I suspect that that's one of the reasons why they're getting out there and jumping on this campaign, even before the opponents have a certified ballot initiative.
And I think that's a very important issue, is whether they will get the signatures. The deadline's earlier this year because it's the second session of the legislature. The last report I saw from them said they had like 35,000. Well, the rule of thumb is you want 75 or 80,000 in order to meet the actual threshold of appropriate signatures. So we may be seeing all these expenses being put forth by the CMP PAC, if you will. And what's going to happen, it may or may not come to any fruition for being on the November ballot. It's really amazing that they're spending this kind of money, not even knowing there's a campaign yet to spend the money on.
If they miss that deadline, though, Mal, is it possible that this referendum gets held but later?
Yes, it could be submitted in the next session, which means you're talking about a vote 2 years from now. Mm-hmm. That's a possibility. But the real issue that Steve's talking about, and I think he's right on the money here, is they're spending all this money anticipating that it's going to be on next November's ballot. That's a presidential election year. We have a hot Senate race. We have a hot second district race. We're talking about a huge turnout. And that's the sort of thing where they want to be out early, because people are going to be so overwhelmed by the candidate campaigns, mm-hmm. the issue stuff may well get buried.
And they also, it seems to me, want to get out real early in trying to frame this debate. This ad that they have been running in the last couple of weeks specifically says that this is a power line to bring hydroelectric power from Quebec to Maine. Now, it will do that, but only on its way to Massachusetts. So I think that's a very interesting, if misleading, thing to be putting in their ad.
Are you saying they're trying to spin this already? Or
And to that point, the other thing that's very interesting about the ad that came out this week is that there is exactly zero mentions of Central Maine Power in that ad. And that's also true of the campaign website that they launched. There's one very oblique mention of CMP, and that's basically embedded in a very favorable news story or a letter to the editor or some sort. That's the only mention of it. And the reason for that, I think, is very simple. CMP's brand has taken a huge hit over the last few years, which you can attribute to its storm response. When power goes out, it seems to take these guys a lot longer to restore power. There's, of course, the billing issue, which is still under investigation. So their brand is right now pretty toxic. And just yesterday, we found out that its customer service satisfaction rating is the worst in the country, even worse than PG&E, which is the utility company, the bankrupt utility company in California, blamed for starting wildfires last year. And this year, to avert wildfires, was turning off the lights for hundreds of thousands of people. you know, they understand that that CMP brand is not something they necessarily want to be affiliated with, although I think everybody in Maine understands that it's CMP that benefits from this particular project. One last note that I'll add is that Governor Janet Mills, I asked her administration about whether or not she is going to play a role in the campaign, because after all, she did come out and support this project last year, in part because of this benefits package that CMP is offering to the state of Maine. The answer to my question is no, she does not see a role for herself in this. And I think politically, that's probably a good move on her part, because if this thing goes down next year, she doesn't want to be too closely affiliated with it.
Let's talk next about the U.S. Senate race next year. And we'll start with a new endorsement for Democrat Sarah Gideon.
What's interesting about this is it's from the League of Conservation Voters, which typically, on the balance, supports Democratic candidates. But what's interesting here is that this group has endorsed Susan Collins in the past. Up until basically 2014, she was endorsed over her Democratic challenger, Shana Bellows, that year. She was endorsed in 2002 over Shelley Pingree when Shelley Pingree challenged Susan Collins for the U.S. Senate seat. But this year, the League of Conservation Voters is saying, no, we are going to endorse Sarah Gideon. She's the Democratic House Speaker here and also has won several other high-profile endorsements from very moneyed interests. League of Conservation Voters, for example, spent $29 million in last year's midterm elections. They spent nearly all of that. They're poised to do that and more, I think, for the presidential election because climate change is going to be such a hot topic. You know, on one hand, you're saying, well, League of Conservation Voters, they typically support Democrats. You know, what's the big deal? Well, the big deal is that I think it's a chipping away at that sort of moderate reputation that she's cultivated over the years.
This is one of those situations, Erwin, where Sarah Gideon's got her playlist going. She's getting all these endorsements lined up by various groups. And what we have to remember here is we're still talking about a primary.
That's right.
We're not talking about the general election against Susan Collins yet in terms of her race. She's got some formidable opponents that she's going to have to face, particularly given the ranked choice voting nature of our primary. This is, to me, is just one more of her little checking off the box of a group that is good for her. Hopefully we'll have some independent expenditures on her behalf in the primary campaign, which already has seen hundreds of thousands of dollars on TV by both Collins and Gideon, and now LaJeunesse, and now we've got independent expenditures from the Chamber of Commerce, and it's almost a year away from the election where we're actually going to choose a senator, and we're continuing to see this parade of independent groups indicating where they're going to be spending some money.
Just to underscore one last thing about what this endorsement has meant to Susan Collins in the past, let's not forget, I mean, she's used this endorsement to her benefit, including that race against Shelley Pingree in 2002.
I would note that, to the best of my knowledge, my opponent is the only Democrat running for the Senate this year who did not receive the endorsement of the League of Conservation Voters. That's the leading environmental group in the country. So obviously, I must be doing something right.
It obviously has meant something to Susan Collins over the years, and now it's gone.
Collins made a point of objecting to President Trump's nomination of Stephen Mnuchin to the Federal Appeals Court, saying his temperament made him unqualified, his writings showed he might be unfair to women, racial minorities, and LGBTQ Mainers. And while Collins did vote against him, Mnuchin was confirmed anyway. Mal, is this a pattern we're likely to see repeated in the months ahead?
I think it's also interesting to note that she voted against even bringing the nomination to the floor to be voted on, which is very unusual for Senator Collins. She has in the past voted to bring a nomination to the floor, then voted against the nominee, be it a court or a cabinet post. She was trying to underscore how strongly she was opposing this guy, and I think it's part of her effort to try to mitigate the Kavanaugh situation where she voted for him to be on the Supreme Court that upset an awful lot of people. She's trying to say, look, I'm pushing back on these people that are really bad and have this track record. I mean, this guy is so bad, this Mnuchin, who has now been confirmed to be on the Second Circuit Court of Appeals, which sits in New York, that he didn't even answer the questions of Republican senators on the Judiciary Committee. And they were frustrated, but They voted to bring him to the floor, and they voted for his confirmation.
The impeachment inquiry hearings continue this week. Democrats, as we've heard, would like to wrap up their proceedings in the House soon so that an impeachment trial in the Senate won't eclipse coverage of the presidential primary season. But, Steve, some Republicans may have other plans.
Yeah, there's been some reports out recently about how the Republicans in the Senate, Mitch McConnell in particular, want to deal with this looming trial. Initially, there was some speculation that they would try to dismiss it, like, quickly, very fast, basically saying that, you know, the House is out of bounds here. But I don't think they have the votes to do that. So now they're trying to figure out how to deal with a trial. And where there have been reports that some Republicans, I'm not quite sure if Mitch McConnell is entertaining this idea, is actually thinking about pushing, dragging the trial out, actually, so that the six Democratic senators who happen to be running for president, it kind of scrambles and mixes up their campaigns to run for president. Because what happens is when there's a trial in the Senate, the U.S. senators stay there and they can't leave. And so you think about that, if you're Elizabeth Warren or Bernie Sanders, you're basically stuck in the Senate chamber dealing with an impeachment trial. And so Republicans are thinking, well, maybe we could scramble the Democratic primary. But I've been thinking about the timing of it and how that might impact Senator Susan Collins. It might actually be beneficial to her to have a protracted trial. You know, if she is inclined to vote for impeaching and removing the president, doing so would certainly draw, I think, a primary challenge from the right. So if this trial drifts into March or late February, that might preempt such a challenge, because that happens to be the deadline to file your paperwork to run for federal office. So it may benefit her. It might actually give her a little bit of wiggle room if they do opt to hold a trial that sort of drags out over a couple of months after the first of the year.
You can see this moving horizon where they were hoping to be done before Christmas to decide whether they would have articles. I don't think that's going to be met now. I think that's going to go past into January. The irony here, of course, is the Democrats control the agenda, and they could end up helping Senator Collins in her race totally inadvertently, I believe.
I was kind of wondering whether or not Republicans would be in a position to control the length of proceedings.
Well, the Chief Justice sets the schedule. We saw that in the Clinton impeachment. But what's going to be going forward is the case is being presented by the House. They're like the prosecutor in a regular courtroom. However long it takes them to present is going to be a factor in terms of how long those proceedings go. And then the president's lawyers will have the opportunity, indeed under the procedure, the president himself could appear and defend himself. That pushes out that horizon even further, to get to Steve's point earlier. For example, if they have 10 articles of impeachment, it's going to take much longer than if they have 3.
That's Maine's Political Pulse for this week. We post the podcast Friday afternoons, but you can hear most of it Sundays on Weekend Edition and some of it Mondays on Morning Edition. Willis Ryder Arnold is our producer, music by Rob Holt. I'm Erwin Gratz.